Coming up next, A Matter of Taste with Rachel and David Michael Caine.
A Matter of Taste. You're tuning in to David Michael Caine.
And Rachel.
We hope you will enjoy the show. I want food. I want it so bad. Let's just sit right back. And enjoy the wine. You say what wine, and I say Merlot. Merlot, Merlot. Feed me if you can, I'm feeling hungry. Won't you please, please feed me? Feed me, feed me.
Well, hello and welcome to A Matter of Taste with the Canes. It's been a very interesting week, which we're going to share a very exciting travel adventure we took. Also, just want to remind you, this is the final week. Next week, we're giving away the turkeys, courtesy of Diestel and A Matter of Taste. We've got turkeys to give away, up to 20-pound beautiful Diestel turkeys. And all you have to do is send us your favorite leftover recipe two ways. Email david@amatteroftaste.com or the old-fashioned way, turkey recipe, A Matter of Taste, 340 Townsend Street, San Francisco, 94107. 340 Townsend Street, San Francisco, 94107. Well, it's been interesting, hasn't it?
It has been, and we just recently returned from our whirlwind wine trip to Argentina to revisit the wines in a few of the different grape-growing regions, and we're still trying to wake up.
On today's show, we'll hear first from an Argentine wine veteran who has an overall perspective of the wines of Argentina. Then Camille Cusimano will join us here in the studio. She's written a book called Tango, an Argentine love story, and she will share her perspective as a Bay Area writer who lived and loved in Buenos Aires.
And we'll be sharing an interview with Dan Perlman. He's an American expat who stopped into Buenos Aires for a holiday and has made a life there in food and wine for the past 4 years. Very interesting guy.
For us, our trip to Argentina was a return to get an update of the wine industry there. We found a greater depth of varietals and styles than we did when we were there 4 years ago, with prices ranging from as low as $7.99 for good quality wines and as high as $150 a bottle for wines that will match the greatest from any wine region in the world.
If you think about Argentina, it's situated in the extreme south of South America, bordering Uruguay, Brazil, Paraguay, Chile, and the Atlantic Ocean. There's a huge geographic diversity, which includes beaches and mountains, deserts and woods, forests and ice, some of which we saw through our many airplane and bus rides as we visited all these regions of wine. From Salta in the north through Mendoza, then south to San Rafael and back to Buenos Aires.
Well, from San Francisco, we flew to Washington and then direct to Buenos Aires, going from fall to spring, plus a time change of 5 hours. Our biorhythms, needless to say, are a little bit messed up right now, as does the difference in culture and lifestyle mess it up on occasion. And, of course, dinner was usually starting around 10 o'clock at night, and that's if we were lucky.
Well, our first dinner was steak and tango. It's sort of like you get off the plane and they take you to steak and tango. We'll talk more about that later. Then we took a city tour to reorient ourselves to the very beautiful European-style city that Buenos Aires is. And we ended up in an area called La Boca, meaning the mouth, which I had never seen before, and we were there 4 years ago. We didn't get there, but it's a very beautiful, colorful, artistic part of the city. And we met a lot of porteños, which is the name for people living in Buenos Aires, kind of relating to the role of the importance of the port city it was for immigrants. A city now that is populated by around 10 million people, including the surrounding areas.
Well, the northern region of Salta dedicates most of its territory to vine cultivation, and they boast some of the highest altitude vineyards in the country and on the planet at the foot of the Andes Mountains. The grapes love it a lot, and Mendoza has some of the most scenic snow-covered mountains you've ever seen, or we've ever seen. We were totally blown away by it. The weather was fantastic. The area is a great hub for exploring the wineries that have grown up there over time, and we found many people from the French and California wine business investing and adding a new perspective to the wines.
They're buying everything they can. San Rafael, we found the namesake of a place we live in, was a contrast to the north with even more diversity. Our first guest, Frederico, will share his knowledge of the history of the varietals most often found in Argentina as our show continues on the Green 960 weekend.
Boca.
Oaxaca. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, they say that wine is part of life, and here it certainly is. I can't imagine an Argentine meal with great beef and a wonderful company without the spectacular wines to accompany it. Can you, David?
I can't. Federico, one of the things that's very interesting, a lot of people don't know of the regions of where wine is produced in Argentina. Maybe you can give us a little bit of a geographical layout from north to south, east to west. Where is the wine coming from?
Well, we have a long stretch of land that has microclimates that are very good for wine growing. And this is because we have the Andes Mountains that separates us from the Pacific Ocean. And thus, all the winds that come from the west with moisture leave all that moisture on the mountaintops. The Andes Mountains are not only high, but also wide, in some parts over 300 kilometers wide. That determines that in the right side of the Andes, in the eastern side, we have this semi-desertic conditions. That are very good for wine growing. And we have to irrigate, of course, but we have the benefit of unpolluted water from the snowmelt of the Andes Mountains. If we go north to south, we begin at parallel 22nd, latitude south, and that would be Salta. Then you have La Rioja, Catamarca, San Juan, Mendoza, Neuquén, and Rio Negro. There's also some wine growing in other provinces. What I name were provinces. This is a stretch that goes for about 2,000 kilometers. Argentina, you have to have in mind, is a long country. We have warm weather at the north and cool weather in the south as we are nearing to the southern pole. And, well, this is what the immigrants profited with planting grapes all over these regions.
When you talk about the immigrants planting grapes, you're not talking about 20 years ago. You're talking about how long ago and where are these immigrants from?
We're talking about over 100 years. The immigrants in Argentina, promoted by the government by the end of 19th century, began coming in order to populate Argentina. And Argentina was a largely underpopulated country, and we have a very progressive government then, Domingo Faustino Sarmiento, who had the idea that governing was populating. And very much like you did with the West and with the immigrants in the United States, this thing happened in Argentina, promoted by the government. And in those days, the Italians were trying to run away from poverty in their country. And lots of them came to Argentina to be granted with land and possibilities of a prosperous future. At the same time, Argentina had the railroads established, and the railroads really communicated the populated areas with the production areas. The English, who laid the railroads, wanted to have cargo from the production areas into the port, which is in Buenos Aires. And so this natural flow of goods also favored the development of the wine industry.
Now, the wine region, too, of Patagonia is one we don't hear about. We hear about Patagonia wool. We hear about sheep and lamb from Patagonia. But wine also grows in Patagonia.
Well, Patagonia has only recently come into the map of wine growing in terms of quality wines. Patagonia, firstly, had wine plantations only in the province of Rio Negro, which were planted there to supply wines to most of the Patagonia provinces. And there were all kinds of wines, but there were few wineries producing quality wines in early days. Then, as Mendoza and communications by road grew from Mendoza to the south, the wines from Patagonia weren't able to compete with Mendoza because of a matter of yield. You have to understand that Patagonia is very dry, it's windy, and this curbs production. It's very difficult to get high yield in Patagonia. So I make a joke about this. I always say we are condemned to quality because the only way to survive and get some profitability in Patagonia is to bet on quality.
We're going to speak about the quality. We're going to talk about the varietals. We all think of Argentina and we think of Malbec. The history of Malbec is pretty interesting. Maybe you can just talk about the history of how is Malbec and why did it become so popular here in Argentina?
Well, again, the same president, Sarmiento, in those days, wanted to organize the vineyards in Argentina. And he appointed a French technician, Monsieur Puget. And this guy brought in Malbec. Because in those days, Malbec was widely planted in Bordeaux. We're talking pre-phylloxera days, not now. Bordeaux has no more Malbec, only in Cahors, in the coast. You have about 4,000 hectares. But in Argentina, Malbec thrived very well because of the conditions, lots of sun. You have to understand Malbec is a very vigorous plant. You need to curb the vigor in order to get quality grapes and full ripeness. And that you achieve with the temperature gap you get in Argentina.
The variety of Malbec, if a lot of people say, well, how do you describe it? If you had to come up with one word to describe Malbec, what would that description be?
It's difficult in one word. I would say lively. I would say red fruits, plum.
Ripe, big, rich fruit. Let's talk about some of the other varietals. Rachel, you are really interested in this particular one.
Well, for the white wines, I'm loving this Torontes. Tell us about that varietal.
Torontes is indigenous to Argentina. Nobody really knows the origin. There are many theories. Any one of those could be. It's a very fragrant grape, and it's planted all over Argentina. There are about 8.5 thousand hectares. That would be about 20 acres planted in different provinces. There are three clones recognized of Torrontés. One is Riojano, the other is San Juanino, and the other one is is Mendocino. They have different patterns of flavors. All of the flavors have to do with tropical fruits. If you go to the north, you get more mango and more pineapple and peaches. And you go south, let's say Mendoza, you find more peaches, less mango, the same amount of pineapple. And you go to Patagonia, wonderful thing is you find lychees and maybe ripe kiwi and a little bit of peaches. So it's very interesting.
Well, it's also used as a sparkling grape.
Yeah, well, we are beginning with that, and we're doing a sparkling that it's low alcohol. It's about 10% in volume, and it's the product of only one fermentation. We don't produce the wine and then re-fermentate. So it's done in a pressure tank and then filtered and bottled.
And it's a sweet wine. And then speaking of sparkling, Pinot Noir was originally planted as a grape to put into sparkling wine, and now you're using it as a still wine.
Well, you know, Pinot Noir is very demanding on the land. But besides that, Pinot Noir wasn't vastly planted in Argentina. I don't know for what reason, maybe historical reasons. And the large quantities of Pinot Noir planted in Mendoza, for instance, were mainly planted for production of sparkling wine. If you think that we have over 200,000 hectares of vines planted along the regions in Argentina, and you think that we have only 1.4 thousand hectares of Pinot Noir, it's strange. But don't know the reasons why. In Patagonia, it's a place where Pinot Noir really thrives well because of the cooler days and the much cooler nights. We have a very high temperature spread.
Let's talk about a grape called Bonarda. A lot of people don't know that in the United States. The description of Bonarda, how would you describe it?
Bonarda is a grape brought from by the Italians. It's from El Veneto. It's a very fruity grape. Some of the flavors are quite similar to Pinot Noir. And if you're not very aware, you can be confused on a high-yield Pinot Noir by a high-yield Bonarda, for instance. They have similarities. It's a grape that produces wines, a wide range of different styles of wine, all of them fruity, but with different concentration. If you have low-yield Bonarda, you can put it through oak and have a well-structured wine with really appealing fruit. If you have high-yield, you can have a very light wine, very interesting and very appealing for Italian food.
Well, as you say, wine is meant to go with food. Wine is food. It belongs on the table in any civilized society.
So thank you for sharing all of your great wine with us.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much, Federico.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Your success in the kitchen depends on a number of ingredients. One of the most important ingredients is the cookware that you use. All-Clad is a favorite choice of professional chefs and serious home cooks. There are five complete collections of cookware, each featuring distinctive design and performance elements with specialty pans for every purpose. Whether you choose the MasterChef, LTD, Stainless, Copper Chef, or Copper Core, All-Clad is innovative design and is guaranteed for life. Each piece is made of multiply bonded construction. Along the bottom and up the side is a pure aluminum core, which is essential for retaining heat and distributing it evenly. The stainless steel interiors resist sticking and won't react with foods. All-Clad Metal Crafters, the makers of a superb line of cookware, the perfect gift for yourself or anyone you know who cooks. For discriminating cooks who want truly professional cookware, All-Clad is unparalleled in excellence. Everything for the connoisseur kitchen, including cookware, kitchen tools, accessories, and a fantastic collection of bakeware. For a brochure, call 1-800-ALLCLAD or on the web at allclad.com.
Experience the personalized comfort of a Sleep Number bed during our Veterans Day sale. Save $500 on Queen or King Special Edition bed sets. That's only $13.99 for a queen set while supplies last. Or receive free bedding accessories plus interest-free financing until 2010 with approved credit on all other beds. Go to sleepnumber.com or call 1-800-SLEEP-NUMBER for the store near you. Sale ends November 11th. Sleep Number by Select Comfort. It's the bed that counts.
This is the time of year that we celebrate. It's not about the parades or the big game.
Touchdown!
It's about loved ones and family traditions.
And don't forget, Campbell's Green Bean Casserole.
A special holiday feast.
With Campbell's Green Bean Casserole.
Enjoying your favorite traditional dishes.
Especially the green bean casserole.
And all the wonderful things this season is about. Find green bean casserole and many other holiday recipes at campbellskitchen.com. Campbell's Green Bean Casserole. Make some holiday magic.
Well, if you've ever heard that music, it's the kind of music that gets your feet tapping. And remarkably, before I left, a book landed in my lap called Tango, an Argentine Love Story. And boy, was it. It captured my attention for the entire time I was in Buenos Aires. It was great to read a book that was written about a place that you are. It's a love story of Camille Cusumano's fervor for tango, how it wrecked her life and then saved it. She went to Argentina to learn more about her ardor for tango, but ended up learning more about her heart, her body, her soul, and I am so happy to welcome her to the studio.
Thank you, David and Rachel. It's a pleasure to be here.
I had no idea that there was a tango culture in San Francisco, and then when I got to Buenos Aires, of course, there's tango. How did the two connect for you?
How did the two communities?
Tango and here, San Francisco, writing Buenos Aires. Tell us your story, quick.
Well, I was studying tango here in San Francisco first.
As an art? I mean, just as a recreational.
Okay. I'm an accidental tanguera, I like to call myself. I was actually doing swing, Lindy and West Coast swing, which is very happy, jumpy dances, very extroverted dances. And people would say to me, oh, you've got to try this Argentine tango. And they would all but levitate off the ground. Mm. So I was curious, but I was not enamored as I told a friend, a beginner class of Argentine tango looks like a scene from Night of the Living Dead. All the anxiety-ridden faces.
I would imagine there's a lot of bruised feet, too. When you look at a tango being danced, you can't believe they're not stepping on each other. It truly is an art form. And you decided that you would take your love for this and move it to Buenos Aires. That was pretty bold.
Well, I got a little kick in the pants.
That always helps.
Yes, I did. I was... Well, my love life was falling apart, to sum it up. Mm-hmm. And I was very unhappy, and I was dealing with feelings I couldn't even deal with. So I was actually going for 2 months. And when I got there, after 2 days, I canceled my return flight, and I ended up staying a year and a half.
What was it that drew you to stay there?
The people, for one thing. Well, the fact that tango was you can tango in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, from 2 p.m. in the afternoon until 6 a.m. at night. And I needed a lot of tango, a lot of hugging, embraces. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a close embrace dance.
It is.
To heal my heart.
When you watch the dance, you get the feeling there's a lot more going on. Is there a story being told? It's almost like listening to an opera without the soundtrack.
Oh, my God. It's incredible. There's so many secrets in tango exchanged, not always verbally. Sometimes the body becomes an instrument of language.
And how did you tie that together with your Zen practices? You kept weaving that throughout the book, and somehow they ended up one feeding the other. Which way did that go?
Well, I'd been a Zen practitioner for almost 20 years, 18 years, actually, when I started tango. And it was my meditation was a place where I went to get quiet and still and find that sweet spot of bliss, which I found hard to find. But I started noticing these parallels in tango. They advise you not to talk, not to think too much, not to anticipate. It's a dance of improvisation. And it was very much like my meditation. Within this motion, I started to find the stillness that I looked for in Zen. So I began to actually sit less meditation and dance more, and to bring this surrender and letting go of ego that I had so wanted in Zen. And I still do both.
It's an amazing combination. And with all that, you were able to really get to know the city and really get to know a lot of the people. And did you feel they embraced you, and that you almost could live there if you wanted to?
Oh, yes. Yes, I could. Mm-hmm. They did embrace me. It's a big crowded city, and the pedestrians don't have the right of way. It's always my biggest complaint. But when you meet these people, they hug you right away. Everybody hugs. They don't shake hands. And they, as soon as they know you're from you're American, they love you, and they want your approval. And they open their hearts. They open their homes more than any culture I've lived in before.
Mm-hmm. And did you find that you were attracted to the food, and that then when you started cooking, were you cooking San Francisco style cuisine for the Buenos Aires people, or how did that work?
Well, I like to get into the food in the culture where I am, because I feel you taste the culture in the food.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't a big meat eater. I think meat weighs in my diet like a condiment. But when I got there, my first best friend, Patricia, loved all the organ meats, the brains,
the blood sausage.
Yes, yes. So there I was eating the blood of animals with her. But I also, I love their vegetables. The calabasas and the Swiss chard is always on the menu, and beets. So you could always make a salad.
And what was your experience of the wines? Did you learn from being there? Did you bring knowledge there that you wanted to explore more?
I learned a little bit. I wish I had learned more, actually. The wines were absolutely delicious and cheap. We talked about Luigi Bosca was a high-end wine. When I'd go to a good restaurant, I'd look for either Luigi Bosca or Routini, which you can get up here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Chardonnay. I love California Chardonnays. I know I'm not one of those ABC people. I'm an NBC. I was an NBC. Nothing but. So I found a brand I love called Saint-Félicien. And for me, it was for my Argentine friends, it would be a splurge, because it was about $10 a bottle, which was very cheap for us. I love their wines. And the reds, I can't drink too much red up here, but for some reason I could drink a lot more red down there. It agrees with me more.
When we went to La Boca, there were tango places everywhere and people dancing in the streets, it seemed. It's so much a part of the culture, and it's amazing to see that that's here. I know that you're going to be dancing here, and you do that quite often.
Yes.
Tonight, actually, at 5 o'clock in San Rafael at the Belrose Theater. You also have a couple of book signings coming up. Where are they going to be at?
Let's see. I have one at Book Passage in Corte Madera on Friday, November 21st. And
then on Friday, November 28th, you're going to be dancing at a fashion show in Oakland?
Gigi Jensen is having a fashion show. She runs a milonga, which is the venue where tango is danced in Lake Merritt.
Yep.
Yes.
Dance Center in Oakland.
Yes.
And do you dance at these book signings?
I do, because there are a lot of people who don't really understand what tango looks like when it's done socially. So my first thing is to, I read the very first prelude, which, you know, is describes how it is to how it feels to be right up close to a stranger. And then I say, I want to take you inside the dance now. And I always have a partner show up, and wherever we are, a few nights ago, we were on a rug floor in Books Inc. in the marina, and we couldn't get the music to work, but we still did tango.
That's great.
I've never seen Rachel so engrossed in a book as she was in your book. And she said, I couldn't talk to her. I couldn't look at her. She was like just so glued to the book.
That makes me want to cry.
The book made me want to cry, but it also made me want to live and love, and it made me happy. So thank you for sharing your story with us, and I hope that people will meet you at your book signings and get a hold of Tango, an Argentine Love Story. It really is a wonderful tale.
Thank you, Rachel and David. Yeah. Great to be here.
Camille Cusimano. It's an excellent book. Just Rachel's the expression on her face. When we come back, you'll meet a very interesting guy, Dan Perlman from Buenos Aires.
You're there, middle age. It's tough, you're tired, and you worry. What's next? Are you aging well? Are you healthy? Are you sleeping well? How's your attitude, your heart, and your energy level? Do you get up motivated and excited about life? Or are you anxious, depressed, overwhelmed, and wondering where the years went? It's not the real you. Struggling with anxiety and depression is hard, but it can be even harder as you get older. Don't waste the most important years of your life worried and depressed. You're building memories for you and your family right now. You deserve to feel good and be happy now more than ever. I'm Lucinda Bassett, president of the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. Please call right now for a wonderful free CD that can tell you how to take control of your anxiety and depression. Maybe the best years are yet to come. Call now.
For your free CD, please call 1-800-700-2844. 1-800-700-2844. That's 1-800-700-2844.
The nation's first student-managed company, Food from the Hood, is celebrating its 15-year anniversary. Buying their salad dressing sends a student to college. Profits are used as scholarships for the hardworking students involved in the Food from the Hood entrepreneurship program. You can find their low-fat, all-natural, honey mustard, or creamy Italian at major retail stores and online at Amazon.com. What are you waiting for? Send a student to college today. For more information, visit foodfromthehood.com or call 323-759-7000.
Rachel and David Michael Kay.
We ran into a very interesting guy. Dan Perlman is an American who had been living in New York. He's actually from Michigan, so I'm a compatriot. Dan, what amazes me is that you moved here 4 years ago. You love it. What attracted you to Buenos Aires in particular and the Argentine lifestyle?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me that was an attraction to come down here was the relaxed pace. Buenos Aires is a big cosmopolitan city like New York had been. And I'd always loved living in New York, but the constant onslaught of that rapid pace and needing to get something done was becoming wearing, and it was just time to go somewhere where the pace was slower and I could relax and smell the roses, as they say.
So you were involved in Food and Wine in New York, and you came down here to retire, but it didn't quite work out that way, or at least vacation.
Exactly. The best laid plans and all that. I came down here, and to a certain extent, I succeeded. I came down here to get away from the rat race, the fast pace, and indeed have. But my original plan, I had thought that I would spend a lot of time writing and exploring and all that. And while I do some of that, you know, I found myself back in the food and wine world very quickly. But the nice thing has been being able to do it on my own terms and at my own speed.
Well, we're going to talk about what you're doing. And it's very unusual for, well, maybe not so unusual anymore, but it's very unusual for what you would say the cuisine of Buenos Aires is. First off, let's try and define the cuisine of Buenos Aires. What would one typically find here?
Buenos Aires is the cosmopolitan city, the New York of the country in many ways. And it definitely has its own cuisine, its own themes. It's very definitely a world of steak, potatoes, and salads, you know, and what they call picadas, you know, just simple, what we might call an antipasto. You know, it's got a lot of Italian roots that get thrown in there, a little bit of pasta thrown in here and there. But the rest of the country has a much more traditional cuisine. Certainly there's the gaucho tradition of all the meat and potatoes that you get from the cowboy world. But the whole north part of the country has a much more similar cuisine to that of the rest of the Andean countries. You know, you've got the empanadas, the tamales, the stews ranging from very simple stews to very elaborate, spicy sorts of stews. And in the far south, you've got a very definite wild game and seafood world in Patagonia with the forests where all the game are and then being surrounded basically on two sides by both the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean.
The impression I had was the food was going to be spicy, and I thought I remembered it was from when we were here before, but I think it was the chimichurri sauce I put on everything we ate, so that's what made the food spicy. And basically it's Spanish cuisine, Italian cuisine, and what else?
Well, within Buenos Aires, not a lot else. I mean, Spanish and Italian are certainly the biggest influences, with the Italian population being over 40% of the city and close to 30% being Spanish descent. That takes up a big chunk. The cuisine is definitely not spicy until you get to those northern areas on the borders with Bolivia and Peru and Paraguay, and maybe even a bit with Brazil. And even chimichurri within Buenos Aires tends to be a toned-down version from the rest of the country. You know, it's basically just a very simple herb, garlic, and vinegar sauce.
Well, it's something that we love. We like to make and play with chimichurri at home, and we've picked up a few of the local ingredients to maybe spice ours up a bit. Who knows? Maybe it's going to help. You mentioned, too, which was kind of interesting, New York, you said there's the rat race, and it is more laid back here, yet this is a city, and when you go out and stand in a corner, you see cabs going by, and there's a heartbeat, there's a pulse to the city. You have created a culinary world, which is very unusual. How would you describe what you're doing culinarily?
Oh, that's a tough one. The local term for what we're doing is called a restaurant a puertas cerradas, a closed-door restaurant. It's a restaurant run out of a private home or out of a private space that you can only get to by reservation, by membership, or by recommendation. In our case, we stick with something simple. Reservation is good enough for us. But what we do is we bring in cuisine from all over the world. We've gone the true multinational route, not with a fusion cuisine. We don't necessarily blend cuisines, but you know, 1 week we could be doing a Russian dinner, and the next week we might be doing a South African dinner. And anything from anywhere, or you know, using all bright orange ingredients, just sort of whatever strikes our whim. Personally, we call it cocina de capricho, or whimsical cuisine.
Is it a surprise to the locals, or who is your main clientele?
It's different for the locals. I don't know that it's a surprise. Certainly, the locals who come are those who are more adventurous. They're often people who are a little more well traveled than the average man in the street. But we're pretty evenly mixed between locals, expatriates from various countries, not just from the U.S., and visitors, tourists from all over the world.
And you serve five courses, and they're matched with five wines. And how many seats do you have?
We have exactly 12 seats, split between two tables. And people, that's the other thing that's unique about our location, is that people share the tables with people they don't know. So we try to mix it up so that people aren't sitting with their own friends. We have a lot of people come solo, just for the purpose of meeting people or because they're traveling on their own.
And it's called?
Casa Salt Shaker.
That's a great name, Casa Salt Shaker. Was there a reason for that?
Well, quite a few years ago, I had started a food and wine blog called Salt Shaker, and the intent of that was shaking a little bit of salt on the world of food and wine, sort of spicing it up, or maybe rubbing salt in the wounds. We were never quite sure. But on the day that we created our little restaurant, I just wasn't feeling over creative about the name, and I said, let's just go with Casa Salt Shaker. People know me, us, from that.
Well, the cuisine is very creative. We're going to talk about that, and also the wine matches. You're in a country that's known for wine. There's a lot of opportunity for mixes and matches, and we'll talk about some of the more unusual cuisines of the world that you do here in Buenos Aires with the wines. There's more straight ahead when A Matter of Taste continues on the Green 960 Weekend. Today's Wine Education Minute is brought to you by Kendall Jackson. Very often these days, you'll find the words old vines on a wine label.
In French, the term is vieille vigne. It refers to the age of the grapevine, which usually is 35 to 40 years or older. Because old vines produce a very small quantity of fruit compared to younger vines, the quality of their grapes and the resulting wine is considered to be better. However, just being old doesn't guarantee the wine made from it will be superior. A lot depends on the treatment of the vines, in terms of water management and the stress of the vines. Another problem is the phrase is unregulated, and anyone can claim that their vines are old. And is old in California the same age as old in France? The true test is in tasting these wines and deciding for yourself. After all, it's really a matter of taste. This Wine Education Minute has been brought to you by Kendall Jackson, America's most awarded winery. For more information, visit them online at kj.com.
You've probably heard us talk about David's Old World brand pastrami. We love great pastrami sandwiches, and when you find a restaurant that serves one, bravo for them and great for you. Here are some restaurants that are sure bets. If you're in Walnut Creek, drop in for lunch at Lark Creek for a Reuben sandwich made with David's. Or try the Pasta Shop in Berkeley, where their pastrami sandwiches are made with our delicious slow-cured and smoked pastrami. In Santa Rosa, Dierks Parkside Cafe makes their Reuben with David's Old World brand pastrami. The Dry Creek General Store in Healdsburg has a pastrami sandwich that also features David's. In San Francisco, Golden Gate Butchers by the Bay at Ferry Plaza always has a hot and juicy pastrami sandwich ready for you. If you're in the Westfield Center, stop into Witchcraft or any Witchcraft restaurant in New York, because all their pastrami sandwiches are made with David's. And at selected Bay Area Whole Foods stores, try David's all-natural pastrami on a sandwich made with their grilled, wonderful focaccia bread with mustard and Swiss cheese. If you want to create your own pastrami sandwich, check out our website, amatteroftaste.com, and click on the artisanal meat page to find out where you can buy it by the pound. The pastrami is unforgettable. The name is easy. It's David's.
Don't cry for me.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dan Perlman, and he is the chef extraordinaire and sommelier of his own restaurant here in Buenos Aires. I'm wondering, Dan, when you do certain foods, do you focus on some of the varietals that you think match better with some of the flavors of your foods? And maybe we can give some tips to our audience of how to choose Argentine wine.
Okay. One of the things particularly we're known for is spicy cuisine, and I don't necessarily mean that in the terms of hot spicy like chilies, but that we use a lot of spices. And with that, I think it requires a different touch with the wines. The Malbec that everyone knows from Argentina, of course, is a great match with steaks and big meaty dishes and things like that. But it doesn't necessarily hold up when you start dealing with spicy things. And Argentina has a really nice range of wines. On the white side, we have the Torrontes, which is the major white grape. And it's nearly unique to Argentina. There's a little bit grown in other parts of the world, but not much. And it's got a nice, beautiful aromatic profile that goes great with spicy foods. On the red side, Bonardas, which most people don't realize is actually the most widely planted red grape in Argentina, far more than Malbec, but most of it's used for blending. However, more and more producers are using it as a single varietal wine, and it's a great match with foods that are lighter, foods that are spicier. In many ways, it has a profile similar to a rich, spicy Pinot Noir. Which is a really nice match with those kind of foods.
The wines of Argentina, though, since you're here, is your predominant theme.
To a certain extent, that's because they're the most widely available here. But at the same time, if we have the opportunity to serve something special from another country, you know, I'm not going to go out of my way to find a cheap Pinot Grigio from Italy. But, for example, we did a Greek dinner recently, and we were actually able, through some Greek wine owners here who work with the Greek embassy, to get some bottles brought in from Greece that we were able to add to the mix of the Argentine wines for the evening, which made a really nice thing for people who'd never tried anything like that.
After people have had a meal at your restaurant, how would you recommend they approach this city as far as, you know, getting to know where to eat? Are there certain neighborhoods? Are there certain types of restaurants that one would look for if they were coming?
Well, certainly I think the first thing everybody does when they get off the plane is they head for the closest steakhouse because they've been hearing about the beef here. You can throw a rock up in the air and have it land in front of a local steakhouse in all probability. When it comes to the rest of it, it can be a little bit more daunting because like any big city, there are literally hundreds and hundreds of restaurants. There are a couple of online restaurant guides that are available, mostly just in Spanish, as well as the written guides. You know, and then there are the standard tourist guides or things like a Time Out magazine or or some other local magazines that offer up restaurant recommendations, as well as I write about restaurant recommendations myself, although they're not so much reviews as just my personal experiences at the places.
And where would somebody find those recommendations if they were looking for them?
If they were looking for my recommendations, they'd be looking on my blog, Salt Shaker, which is just saltshaker.net.
Are there any surprise cuisines? I know I saw a little thing that there's a 2-street Chinatown. Is there anything else that's surprising one might find here?
Well, in addition to the 2-street Chinatown, there's a 2-street Koreatown. There's a small Japanese area. There are the other Latin American cuisines. There's a new movement for Colombian cuisine has become very big here recently. There are a lot of good Bolivian and Peruvian restaurants. And then there are just offbeat things, some different Southeast Asian restaurants scattered here and there, Thai, Vietnamese, Indian. You never know. There's something new around the corner every day, it seems.
Well, have wine will travel. In a country where wine is so popular and so vastly available, it's easy to grab a bottle of wine and get into a restaurant or go to a restaurant and explore something new. There are other liquids that are consumed here, and we found a lot of people drinking coffee throughout the day, but there's something called mate.
Mate, in simplest terms, is sort of like a green tea, except it's not from the tea plant. It's an herbal infusion. It's drunk in an unusual way in that you take a good quantity of the leaves and you pack them into a small cup with a straw that has a sort of filter in the end, and you just keep topping it off with hot water and drinking it over the course of time in small amounts. And it creates an infusion. It's a somewhat like a bitter green tea. Some people sweeten it, most people don't. But the unique thing about mate, in addition to, or beyond that it's an infusion, is that it's a social beverage. Like our Native American tradition of passing the peace pipe, you pass the mate, and the mate is actually the name of the cup. The herb itself is called yerba mate, or the mate herb. And what you do is each person in turn, going around a little group of friends, takes a turn drinking from it, and you always pour, either one person is the designated pourer, or you pour for the next person in line. And it's a social interaction and considered extremely important to social settings here.
Well, it's an interesting tradition, and also trying to look for the perfect mate container to take home is kind of fun to do while you're here.
We suggest people read about you. They can do it online again, and you give out that address.
Saltshaker.net.
That's the place to go. When we come back, we will wrap from Buenos Aires. We are the Canes. You're listening to A Matter of Taste.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services term life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. Now, we'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a 40-year-old man on blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price? $20 a month.
Thanks, Joel. See how affordable term life insurance can be for you. Call 1-800-500-3173. That's 1-800-500-3173. Or go to selectquote.com. SelectQuote. We shop. You save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health and other factors. Not available in all states.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Why spend more than you have to on your life insurance? Did you know that term life insurance rates have fallen over 60% in the last 10 years? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. At AccuQuote.com, we monitor the rates, features, and financial strength of hundreds of life insurance products. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can protect his family with $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $19 a month. Female rates are even lower. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life policies that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Why not find out how much you can save? Write down this number and call today for your free quote. Call 800-500-2171. One 5-minute call is all it takes. 800-500-2171. That's 800-500-2171.
Once again, Rachel and David Michael Caine.
Our feet are just about hitting the ground. It's been whirlwind. Speaking of strength, you know, as Dan was talking about mate, we've got our margaritas here, and of course, we'll never give those things up. We've got the new wave of cocktails made with infused vodkas, designer gins, rums, bourbons, and scotch. But Argentina is experiencing a wave of drinkers who are drinking, are you sitting down, Fernet, Branca, and Coke.
I don't think just saying that could describe how awful it is. If you don't know the taste of Fernet Branca, I don't even know how you would describe it.
It's an Italian digestivo. And one of the things, too, because there's so much tax on imported products that Fernet actually is distilled in Argentina. So it's a very friendly pricing. But, I mean, Fernet Branca is, if you've had too much rich food, a good shot of Fernet's going to really straighten you out. But this has become a... I guess it's a real passion. It's Fernet and Coke, and I tasted it at one of the with the people.
Well, it's like Red Bull used to be.
Yeah, right. Red Bull and vodka. It's actually pretty interesting flavor profile, but you know, after you have too much beef, a good
Which
shot
you, you
of...
can't avoid having.
Well, our overall impression of the wines of Argentina is that they're world class players on the wine stage, and lucky for us, many of the wines are making their way to wine shops here in California. And as we become more familiar with the brands and the varietal bests, a few wines have emerged as our favorites.
Well, in the south of the country, from Patagonia, there was a Familia Schroeder, which featured the varietal Torrontes, a very light, tropical, fruity, like, yet unlike Sauvignon Blanc. It was a great way to begin the meal as an aperitif. Another wine that we liked was a blend of Pinot Noir and Malbec, a signature of Schroeder, and a perfect partner to beef, the mainstay of the gauchos on all their little estancias. They say being a vegetarian in Argentina is like being a priest in the Playboy Mansion, and I can see why they said that. From the region around Salta in the north, the winery Bodega El Esteco has a series of wines called Don David, not named necessarily after you, but which represent a great value of the grape Tanat. And then Colomé, a winery owned by Donald Hess, the Swiss art collector and proprietor of Hess Winery in Napa, produces an estate Malbec grown biodynamically. It was a standout for us in a region that produces a lot of Malbec.
Well, from our base at the Park Hyatt in Mendoza, we were able to visit many wineries that surround the city. The winery Gascon, best known for their Malbec, presented a Viognier, which was really interesting. It was a great variety, had great varietal character. Now, Gascon is imported by Gallo, and they will probably, I hope they bring this in, because it's going to represent a really phenomenal value in Viognier, which is one of the most friendly food wines that we've seen. The same region, we also tasted wines from Rutini, specifically one called Apartado, which is a blend of Malbec, Merlot, and Cabernet Sauvignon, and it really delivered great fruity flavors. Norton's Privada is a wine of a similar blend and was also extremely delicious.
But they have a whole variety of wines here, and you know, Norton is a really safe bet if you want to get a great taste of Malbec. Then we went to the Uco Valley, which is outside of Mendoza, has a number of outstanding wineries, not to be outdone by the California influence in other areas. Clos de los Siete is a winery with French roots designed by the Bordelais. Watch out for that one. That one's going to really come on strong.
Yeah, the most familiar wines to us were by Catena Zapata and Familia Zuccardi. We met them on our first trip to Argentina in 2004, and the Catena family representative daughter, Laura, actually lives here in San Francisco, commutes to the family winery outside of Mendoza. That's quite a commute. And it might be easier for them to bring the winery here perhaps someday in the near Napa future. You never know. Yeah. Wineries are finding themselves here with roots in South America. The wines that we tasted that are new to the wine world are Decero, Finca Decero, with a wine called Amano, which means from scratch and is making wines of exceptional quality for a good price. They're blending Bordeaux varietals, but also bottling a separate Petit Verdot that is absolutely great. New is Vina Cobos. It's a project in conjunction with Paul Hobbs from Sebastopol, and he's putting his mark on Argentina with extraordinary Malbec, Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay under the Brumaire label. And these are just some of the highlights and favorites of the trips. We will include these and many more details of the wine excursion hopefully by the end of the week on our website, amatteroftaste.com, on the wine page. If you want to know more about wines of Argentina, there's a great website, which is winesofargentina.org. Just like it sounds, winesofargentina.org. It talks about the various wineries and tells you quite a bit about the wines.
Yeah, it would be interesting if you're looking for new tastes in wine to explore the different varietal grapes that are coming from Argentina, although they are doing a lot now with all the varietals that we know. And it's funny, when you go to a region, it really gives you a great sense of the terroir of the place, because when you sit at the base of the Andes Mountains, these are the most beautiful snow-capped mountains you can imagine, and you realize that all these wineries are at such a high altitude to begin with. You know, here we always talk about the highlands wines and, you know, going up to the mountains. Well, that's peanuts compared to when you're in the
hillside.
Andes.
Right.
You know, I mean, Andes is no hillside. It's mountains. But the heritage is just incredible when you think about the grapes that were brought over here, over there 100 years ago, and that the wineries are still going strong and changing. You know, I think that we noticed that when we went to Brazil, that things are changing all the time. And as they get the technology from here and from France, and they're open to revamping their wineries and updating things, they just take a great thing and make it better.
There are a lot of great value wines. I you can find a really good bottle of wine for around $8 from Argentina. But I will say, and we'll have to confess, and this is not on our shopping list, but we were able to taste some of the wines that were well over $100 a bottle, and they were pretty extraordinary. I mean, they are the types of wines that, if you think about what's happened with Bordeaux, a lot of it's supply and demand. If you get to the classified growths of Bordeaux, Chateau Latour, Lafite Rothschild, Mouton, etc., they get big dollars because it's supply and demand and it's quality. But when you taste some of these wines, which we'll specifically talk about some of the certain wines that we really were blown away by on the website by the end of the week. And when you taste these wines, you really understand that these are absolute world-class wines. They can compete right up there in tasting. Some of the Malbec-based wines, or the 100% Malbec wines, have a unique character to them. And then you start to see the blends with Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot. This
what about that Petit Verdot?
I was going to say that. DeSero actually bottled a 100% varietal Petit Verdot, and the wine was extraordinary. It was really rather extraordinary, and I'm pretty sure that wine that will be available. It was not a lot of it. One of the things that we've also noticed, a lot of the wines are being produced for export to the U.S. market. You know, let's say winery produces, you know, 50,000 cases of wine. You find out that 90% of it's made for export. The consumption of wine in Argentina is high, but the types of wine that they're drinking are jug wines. They look like a small jug with a kind of a basket around them.
Sort of Chianti-ish style,
sort
if you
of
think
Chianti-ish,
about
yeah.
where their roots came from. It's a culture that's been drinking wine their entire lives. You know, they came over as immigrants with it, and they grew it, and then their children grew up with it. So they do consume a lot of it, but it's not a culture that is used to spending a lot of money.
No, and we also agree that wine should not be an investment of like putting a kid through college. You should be able to buy a bottle of wine. And we also think the same thing at restaurants. And one of the things we notice too, the amount of wine that you will see on a table, be it half bottles or full bottles.
Constantly.
And, you know, priced moderately. We wish that more restaurants here would take that approach and have more affordable pricing.
Yeah.
I mean, when a bottle of wine, I think a bottle of wine should be priced in a restaurant. This is just on my opinion. Somewhere in the neighborhood of what a entree, you know, moderate price entree should be. It shouldn't be, you know, five times. If, mm-hmm. if your most expensive thing on your wine list is $25, it shouldn't be $75 for a decent bottle of wine. There should be some good wines in that price range. And of course, you know, that expansion. But I'm going to suggest when you're out, you take a look at the wines of Argentina.
And I hope that more wine shops get bigger Argentine mm-hmm. sections, because right now, sometimes on a wine list, it's listed as other.
Other, right.
You know, and it would be nice for that to get some recognition. And we hope that we can spur your interest in tasting more of the Argentine wines. You know, go to your wine shop and tell them what you like, and see if maybe they can convert you to a similar grape in that you don't know.
And particularly, I would suggest go to the that website, winesofargentina.org, and you'll find a lot in there. Meanwhile, look for our wine review update on the website, amatteroftaste.com, under the wine reviews. Have a great week.